Bridget and Cody. Comedians discussing obscure books with witty commentary. Odd books, bizarre books, awful books, oddball books, slightly racist, super racist. Get your fix from Cody and Runjit.
Ladies and gentlemen and other undescribed people, welcome to Tomefoolery.
Tomefoolery.
I, of course, am Cody Melcher.
I am Runjit Sowry.
And let's, Runjit, let's just go ahead and introduce our guests. I'm excited to have him here.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast. I almost said stage. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Jamie Campbell.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you, Jamie?
Good, good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. Thank you for showing up here at the last second that we just were about to introduce you. You just ran right in the door. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I've got good timing. You can't teach that.
No, you can't
good
teach timing.
Comic timing, this guy.
Fantastic, yeah. We have definitely not been standing around for about an hour talking to each other.
Certainly not.
No, not at all.
It's like just-in-time inventory.
That's right.
Yes, and Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Yeah. We made it.
Yeah, America.
The world exists.
Yes, we didn't die in an apocalypse.
That's true.
Or did we?
Oh, valid. Oof.
Bum, bum, bum.
Maybe that's why Honey Boo Boo is still on the air.
Bum, bum, bum. Green Giant.
So as a reminder for those of you who have not read the title of this podcast and just for some reason blindly clicked on it, we are, of course, reading Baby Fever by Susan Crosby.
Why wouldn't we be?
Because it's horrible, and we'll get to that later.
That's exactly why we would not be.
You know what's so
but we are.
You know what's so funny, if I can digress for a second?
Yes.
So when we did Pink Swastika with Chris Simmons, the book about the Nazi Party being created by homosexuals so that they could later have something to complain about, we thought that would be a low point.
By the way, Cody was not joking when he just...
Yeah, that was actually an
that
episode.
Was a correct synopsis.
I remember
that
you
book.
Telling me about the book and me thinking
it's like
that
right
can't
behind
exist.
You. It's frightening. We thought that was going to be the low point, right?
We did.
And then we did The Fur Tree, and now we're doing this book. And this
book might well be a new low in the annals of tomefoolery.
And the world.
History.
And the world, let's be honest. But first, if we may stuff further into the annals of tomfoolery.
I'll just fill my annals up.
Jamie, what do you normally read other than Harlequin romance novels?
Well, you know, this was definitely a slight departure for me. Right now I'm reading a biography about Richard Pryor. It was written in 1991, so...
Okay.
And
is that post-burn or pre-burn?
It is post-burn,
right?
Because the burn, I think, happened in 1982 when he was freebasing and set himself on fire and then ran about a mile down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it might have been down a freeway. So I'm reading about that.
A freeway is just a large street.
That's right.
You think about it.
Well, it is.
Life is a highway.
It's
I'm going to ride it all night long.
It's a big old sidewalk for cars. That's all
yes,
a freeway
it's
is.
It's just a large sidewalk for cars.
Yep. Reading that, and I'm reading the first Game of Thrones book as I watch the series, and then I've been watching the book, which is mostly just reminding me of all
he's
the
been
things
watching
I've
the
seen.
Book, Cody.
He's just been watching the book.
I've been watching
the
book.
He sets it down on his desk.
He sees if it does
watches
anything.
It.
Yeah.
He's hoping.
Well, I already know what's in it.
He's hoping that it'll turn into that movie with Macaulay Culkin, where all the books come alive.
Oh, The Good Son.
Is that what it is? I have no,
no.
idea. Was that filmed in Winnetka?
I wasn't there.
Or was
so
that
I'm not
that
sure.
was Home Alone?
I think you're thinking of Blank Check.
Oh, Blank Check starred the young man who played Andy on Family Ties.
Yes, yes.
I watched Family Ties. I have no idea who Andy was.
He was the youngest kid.
I thought he was the mentally retarded kid.
No, that's Life Goes On.
No, I was thinking of Leonardo DiCaprio in Growing Pains, but I was thinking of Gilbert Grape.
Oh, man.
Gilbert Grape, yeah.
How awesome would that have been on Growing Pains?
It would have been a lot better than Kirk Cameron.
Right?
That much.
Oh, Kirk.
Ugh. But anyway, what else do you read?
I like Chuck Palahniuk a lot. He tends to make my stomach turn, but in a way that makes me... not want to throw up so much as just go, man, there's a lot of weird stuff out there.
That's the second tomfoolery shout out for Chuck, because Dan Telfer also mentioned Chuck.
Oh,
Collins.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites. Christopher Moore is not a really, really interesting guy who reminds me of a lighter version of one of my favorite writers, which is Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah. Tom Robbins. Mm. Yeah. Not to be confused with Tim Robbins.
Right. No, not at all.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins just writes notes to Susan Sarandon.
All right, so we Christopher Moore. What's your favorite Christopher Moore?
I believe the last book I read by that guy was, I think it was The Island of the Sequined Love Nun. What a weird name for a book.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like he does stream of consciousness, just weird stories. But there's a lot of, and it might not be stream of consciousness how he writes, but it feels like he just sits down and goes, this would be some weird shit that's kind of fun. And that's what I think when I'm reading it. This is like some weird shit. It's kind
of
fun.
It's like the stand-up comedy of books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he wrote Lamb, which was the story of Biff, Jesus Christ's childhood pal.
Yeah. The last one that I read of his was Practical Demon Keeping.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I wish I could remember all of the books, because I went through a phase where I read about 10 in a row of his.
Wow.
And then it's been a while. I had a job a few years ago in Virginia. I was interning for a theater, and I was making $100 a week, really rolling in it. So I made great use of my library card and just read a ton of books that entire...
The library is the best when you're making, like, no money.
Right.
It is. Movies as well.
I have gone through phases in life where I was making close to nothing, and the library was, like, the best thing in the world.
Oh, it's a lifesaver.
Books and music.
And that's why you need to support your local library.
That's right, you guys.
Read.
Books.
Books.
Signs.
Signs.
Palms. Signs?
Poems or psalms?
Palms.
Oh, I thought you said psalms.
Tea leaves.
Tea leaves.
Yeah. Eye charts.
Riot act.
Oh, that was good.
And weep.
Between the lines.
Between the lions.
My lips.
No new taxes.
All right, so Jamie, now that we've gone through your history of reading and also your knowledge of things that have the word "read" in them,
phrases containing the word "read."
Yeah, that's a fun Jeopardy round.
Baby fever.
Baby fever.
Baby fever.
You could just feel the trepidation in my voice and getting into
Cody
that.
Cody did not want to start discussing.
I was like, can we just
talk about
something?
Everything but the book that we're here to talk about.
Let's talk about something else. You guys like puppies?
An hour from now, everyone will know why.
Oh, God.
What should a book titled Baby Fever be about?
A sick baby.
I would love it if it was about a real condition. Like, oh no, she's got baby fever.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the problem, though, is that especially in Harlequin situations, like a sexual connotation for the word fever usually means that that's what you're into. Like,
right.
Not to be indiscreet, but like jungle fever.
Oh yeah,
is
yeah.
About
you're into
having,
jungles.
Right. Yes, and you've become ill because an insect bit you. So this means a baby bit you, and now you're in love with it.
But babies don't have teeth.
Valid. It gummed you. The baby gummed you. But, like, isn't that creepy? Like, that to me, that sounds like you're into babies. Like, oh,
yeah.
Man, you see Jim over there? He got baby fever. And it's just like, and he's just, like, standing over there with a giant lollipop, like, just, like, looking at a baby.
What a weird book.
I know. Okay, so, yeah. So, Jamie, what's your opinion, just flat out generalization of you've read it, you finished the last god-awful paragraph, and then you close the book, and you place it down on the side table where your pipe is, you adjust your smoking jacket, and you stare off into the fire in front of you, and you say to yourself...
Well, you've set up the visual perfectly, and I say to myself, what the hell just happened in my life? That how do you put all this into one book? It's like she had all these different ideas... And was like, we're just going to put them into one book. Oh, and also, at the end, there is a sequel.
Yeah. We
right.
found out about that in the preface episode, and we were shocked.
Also, part of me kind of wants to read it.
I know, right? I know. It's creepy. I also want
to
read...
What's going to happen to Magnolia? Is she going to find love?
I hope not.
And with whom? That was a big thing.
She's got wedding fever. Like... She's in love with these weddings.
Oh,
there, if I could say just one sentence to the reader about the book Baby Fever, it would be this. We read it so you don't have to.
I think that's perfect.
That summarizes the way I felt.
I agree, but I kind of want them to read it.
I will say it was a very quick and easy read.
That is true.
180 pages.
See, I did not find that.
I mean, it's hard to slog through.
I found it hard to get through because I didn't want to read it.
Right.
It was like homework. I was like, oh my God. And every reversal, every like cliffhanger turn thingy.
Well, like, okay, my favorite thing, and you and I have very different, that's what makes this show interesting, Ranjit, is that you and I have very different interests when it comes to reading these books.
True.
Because you hardly ever like it when it gets really rough, and I love it more as it gets harder. Like, if this had just been a straight-out Harlequin novel, I'd have been like, blah, and you might have been okay. But, like, okay, my favorite part is in the first few chapters, and continuing further, but especially because, like, to get into it, first few chapters has some of the most misogynistic stuff I've ever read in a book ever, especially coming from a female author in a romance novel was hilarious. And, like, I'm not even talking, like, Twilight, where it's, like, you know, a bad relationship. No, blatantly obvious misogyny. Like, at the beginning of chapter two, okay, not voluptuous, Patrick decided. Too much of a political hot potato, which I don't even understand what's happening at this point.
Yeah, he's trying to discover term, or trying to decide on a term to describe the woman that he's into, yes, who is the main character in the story.
Jasmine, yeah. But it's like you just jump into his inner monologue of trying to figure out a word to call her to himself that, yes, he then gets upset about because it's too much of a political hot potato for him to tell himself that she's voluptuous. I don't understand. Statuesque? He tossed that word aside too as Jasmine approached. The description didn't fit either because it implied height and she wasn't tall. Maybe just 5'5" or so. And based on his experience with the opposite sex, he suspected she probably always complained about how she needed to lose 10 or 15 pounds. What the
women
fuck? And then, of course, she backtracks and goes, not in his opinion, however. So isn't he such a nice guy that he has that thought about women because they're all the same? But then, nope, not to him.
Like, yeah. So in his mind, he goes, she probably thinks she needs to lose 10 or 15 pounds. She probably thinks she's fat, but I don't think so.
Aren't I such an upstanding
I'm
man?
Such a good guy.
Oh, look at me stoop down to levels.
Mental high five.
So that shit is what makes me love these books. And that's what I loved about this book was somehow a Harlequin romance novel that I really wasn't expecting much out of this other than just like a really terrible love story that got weird. Yeah. This was not just a weird Harlequin. I mean, like, I told you about this before, Runjit. I used to make trailers. I had a job where I made trailers for paranormal romance novels when I was in college. So I've seen in some really weird shit.
Everyone should see the look on Jamie's
face
right
now.
How
the hell do you get that job? How did that happen?
I knew a lesbian who knew a lesbian who wrote
That's my problem.
Novel.
I just know a lesbian.
Yeah, you need to know
she
a lesbian.
She doesn't know
who
any
also
lesbians.
Knows another lesbian.
You need to get your lesbian onto LinkedIn so she can know another lesbian.
Is there a social media site for people that just want to know lesbians?
I'm probably yes, but I do not know.
Lesbed it. In. It's lesbed in.
Oh, God. And so this book was very weird.
This book was very weird.
It was.
And, well, like, and it started with a mystery that I wasn't expecting to happen.
That was in the prologue. We get this mystery of no one will ever take this baby or take a child away from this woman again.
Right.
Yeah, I have to say, there was a lot more intrigue. And I use quotations around that kind of quotation marks. But there's a lot more intrigue in this book than I was expecting, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Like, there was, like, shit going on in other countries that was affecting
the
plot.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I was not expecting any of that.
And his wife died 25 years before.
I don't want to say get over it, but dude, get over it.
I know. And, like, oh, my God. God, this is a hard book to talk about.
So she had not had sex in 7 years at this point.
Yeah. Oh, so much had happened in 7 years. She'd been working two. Because I mean, that all happened at the beginning as well. She hadn't had sex in 7 years. She'd been working two jobs for 7 years. Like everything was 7 years. So you knew that somebody had taken children from her, and that 7 years ago something happened.
Yeah, something. But you don't have a clue. What? And then you meet Patrick.
Right.
The old man who
Patrick
just had a heart attack.
O'Halloran.
Who just had a heart attack, and he runs a shipping company because he used to be work at a dock.
And he used to be a... Do you guys remember the word for what he used to be?
A stevedore.
I had never heard that word before.
It's like a troubadour, but,
I had to,
but your name's Steve.
That would be a good definition of it, but that's not the right definition.
I may mispronounce that word. I don't even know. But
stevedore. It's S-T-E-V-E-D-O-R-E.
It's like Steve Dore. Hello, my name is Steve Dore.
Yeah.
And it means a dock worker. I had to look it up. When I read it, the first thing I thought is, I'll bet Cody knows this word.
You're only losing one letter. And a space.
Yeah.
Why don't you just call it a dock worker?
When I was in eighth grade, I used to introduce myself to people as a stevedore for a couple of months.
Are you not? You're not joking.
I'm not. When I first learned what that word was,
this does
I would
not
go,
surprise me.
I would say, hello, I'm Cody Melcher, stevedore about town.
Does not surprise me. Hey, did you guys notice the boxing framing device? Yeah, there was a boxing framing device in this book.
It's a lot like Chaucer.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot like Chaucer.
I think the whole book is.
Right. It's very much like the Canterbury Tales.
Okay. So we are going to play a game where you read each of these boxing little things as if you are announcing a boxing match. So, would anyone in particular like to go first?
I suppose I will go first.
Cody? Okay. Too slow, Jamie.
Jamie was about to volunteer.
Jamie's mouth was open.
I was looking for the buzzer.
He missed the boat.
His mouth was open, but it looked like he was about to eat the microphone. So I think that might have been the problem. If he hadn't tried to eat the microphone, he might have been able to make it.
I apologize, you guys. I have microphone fever.
Put that barbecue sauce away, please, Jamie. All right, so Cody, you're going to read this first bullet point as if you're announcing a boxing match.
Because I've watched so many boxing matches, I'll try and remember how that goes.
Cody is a huge fan of the squared circle. Is that wrestling or boxing?
It's a wrestling term, but the rings are somewhat similar.
Okay.
They're very similar. I feel like I'm going to end up accidentally reading this like Howard Cosell instead. So I apologize if that ends up happening. I'm reading the whole paragraph.
The whole first bullet point. Right. Yes.
He laid his hand on hers, bringing her aware of her action as she continued to stroke his jacket. He said, I was afraid you hadn't gone home safely. I didn't even know your last name. I had no way of finding out if you were okay. She said, safe and sound as you can see. She walked away unhurriedly. He conceded round one to her. Yeah, that was Howard Cosell.
That was pretty
that was great.
Pretty Cosellian. All right.
I tried so hard and it just kept going Howard Cosell on me.
As you predicted. Okay, I'm going to do the second one. He waited in the lobby until midnight when the doors were about to be locked. Then he waited outside. She never came. She'd left through another exit. He shoved his hand into his pockets and walked back to his hotel room. Round two, Jasmine.
I hope you find someone wonderful, Patrick. You deserve it, she said. I thought I had, he said quietly. And then he turned and walked away. She didn't watch him go. Instead, she jogged the stairs to a third-floor apartment. Patrick yielded round three to Jasmine by the narrowest of margins.
Ah, that's the crowd. Ah. We are all three professional Foleys in our other our other lives, right?
All
right.
True. He'd almost declared round four his. Then he'd started acting strangely. Now what? He wondered. What wall did he have to scale this time? There was a mystery here, one she didn't want to clue him in on, one he intended to solve.
Patrick smiled to himself. He'd pretty much ignored her all night. Oh, he'd been courteous enough, but not familiar, not pushy, not even seemingly interested. He had caught on to her. She didn't like being pressured, but she didn't like being ignored either. Round five, Patrick by a wide margin.
He leaned across the clunky silver-painted cash register, tipped up her chin with his thumb and forefinger and, watching her the whole time, kissed her in front of everyone, staking its claim, a brief kiss, a mark of ownership. Hoots and hollers echoed in the building. Round six, Patrick. Jesse's got a boyfriend. Jesse's got a boyfriend. The chant picked up volume and enthusiasm as Patrick and Jasmine stared at each other.
And that's when the vampires attacked. Directed by Quentin Tarantino. So my favorite thing about that last one is, okay, the scene is this diner where she works.
Right.
And he's a customer, and he goes up and kisses her. And then the other patrons of the diner start chanting, Jazzy's got a boyfriend. What?
Because it's a because they're all locals, and
so they all know.
Yeah,
I tried to actually picture this happening, though, and I couldn't.
Have you ever lived in a like a small town where there's a small town?
I have.
Like, my grandma worked at this cafe for over 30 years, and everybody that was there, not everybody, but I would say about 60% of the people that were patrons knew her. At the same time, I don't feel like they would ever have chanted that she had a boyfriend.
Was it because she was too matronly?
It's because she was my grandma. She was married.
Oh, valid. So
they'd have just made
that
it a rumor.
Puts a damper on the boyfriend.
What if they had chanted like, right? What if they chanted like, "Grandma's got a husband. Grandma's got a husband."
Now that I'm sure probably did happen.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because she sometimes had to be reminded.
Right. Yeah, I'd imagine. Yeah.
My other favorite thing about this boxing framing device,
yes,
is that. That's where it ends. Those are all of the rounds.
Round six.
And this is like halfway through the book. And I think the writer just like forgot that she had been using this framing device.
Oh, yeah. She'd...
What? Are you telling me that Susan Crosby did not properly plan out this novel?
I feel like this was in the on the old hard drive halfway done for a while. And she's like, oh, man, rent is due. I got to finish
Baby
Fever.
Forgot the boxing framer.
Oh, that's right. I said something about a kid getting taken away in the prologue. Well, going to have to write this stuff in.
Here's what upsets me the most about this framing device. All right, so we ended at round six, right?
Yeah.
There was no KO.
Right.
So who won the
no
match?
No TKO.
Yeah, but like you need to go to the numbers. Like where like the scores. What are the scores for the rounds? Because like we got the wins, but we don't have the numbers.
That's right.
So who wins the?
It also implies that he wins by. Well, there's not a clear winner because they're both getting what they want. They're happy. They're
right.
Not opponents.
Well, but he's a man kissing her, so therefore he wins that round.
But she kissed him back. Oh, he initiates the kiss. I guess.
Yeah, he took charge with his penis.
I gotta start doing that.
And also, the more of a jerk he is, the more he like wins the round.
What?
You know?
Runjit, are you trying to tell me that in a Harlequin romance novel, the more a guy is a jerk to a woman, the more we're supposed to love that man?
Yes, except in his mind.
You're crazy.
In his mind, he's got to be very pure.
That's not how Harlequin romance novels happen. It's about loving relationships where both people are respected as individuals. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're right, Cody.
My mind has
been changed just as quickly as Jasmine's ex-husband's mind was changed.
How young does this dude look on the cover of the book? That cover art is...
Oh, yeah. But I don't think either of those people had anything to do with this book whatsoever. I literally think they just have, like, images, and they just grab one and went with it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not, that had nothing to do with anything that happened in the book.
No.
Not even the picture, like the look of it.
They should have put a baby.
Well, though there was a baby doll watching them, and that could have been her daughter's baby doll.
Oh, that is true. I think they also could have just written a baby doll into it.
Maybe.
Because they're like, well, there's one on the cover. We got to explain why the hell there's a doll watching them make out.
Yep.
My favorite thing was also how they talked about how in shape he was for being so old.
Yeah. Oh, and when his heart would start, when they were getting intimate, and it would be ba-boom, 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 like written in. And for a while, I was like, I forgot that it was because of his heart. I was like, and then she kissed him, ba-boom, and then she kissed him again, ba-boom, ba-boom.
Hey, hey, hey.
Right. That's what
to me, the word kept looking like baboon, and so I just kept reading... Baboon. Baboon. They're like baboons that they're counting
as
they're getting intimate.
They're romantic,
like about to make love, and hey, there's like three baboons over there.
Baboon, baboon, baboon.
Okay, so here's a passage from the book. She moved close to him and pressed her mouth to his chest, sweeping his nipple with a light swirl of her tongue. She hooked his open jeans with her hand and tugged, and she said,
"Baboom."
She didn't say baboom.
Baboon.
She said, "Oh my God, there's a baboon over there in baboon. Our bedroom."
Baboon.
She said, "There's nothing stopping us now." Okay, so what happened when I read that sentence?
I got a chubby.
I didn't get a chubby. Oh. But I thought, I don't remember.
It's because you were thinking about baboons.
I might have.
Yeah. That's why I got a chubby.
Three baboons.
Isn't that why everybody else got a chubby?
Watching them. But I thought of the Starship song, "Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now." And so you guys know that. It's like, "Nothing's gonna stop us now. Cause
this song forever. Yeah. Something about a sweater."
Yeah, I don't think it's about a sweater, but you got idea.
I thought of the song "Don't Stop Me Now" by Queen, which is a song that I actually know. as opposed to the Starship / Jefferson Starship / Jefferson Airplane song, of which I am not intimately familiar.
Yeah, this song, the singer, Grace Slick, to me, very interesting woman. She did so many drugs in the 70s, decided to name her child God.
Wait, did Jefferson Airplane do the white...
Yeah, White Rabbit.
Yeah, I know that song.
And Somebody to Love.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay, so I do have an album of theirs.
Cool.
You have
Jefferson Airplane.
I have Jefferson Airplane's album because I have the album with those two songs on it.
Then they
because
were Jefferson my mom has, Starship.
My mom has a collection of paintings by Grace Slick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, so I do know something, but not that song.
This song was my mom and her second husband's song. Like, as a couple, it was their song.
Did they play it at the wedding?
The wedding was in front of a justice of the peace, and I cried and yelled, "Please don't marry this guy."
Oh, no.
Wow.
Well, and it kind of beat the shit out of me.
God. This is the one that taught you how to keep your shoes clean.
No, it's a different guy.
Okay.
She's had some real shit luck with dudes.
But your real dad's the one that punches the horse.
Yeah, he punched the horse.
My
real dad, I once saw punch a horse in the face.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, listen, he's a veterinarian.
Well, that's interesting. Huh.
Yeah,
well,
they got divorced, though, something... Yeah. Stop them now.
Well, okay, so I did a little bit of wiki research into this song, and I found out this was nominated for an Oscar.
This book?
No, I was about to ask. I was like, this book?
No, the song, "Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now," was nominated for an Oscar in 1988 for, you know, best original song.
Oh, that's when I was born.
In a movie.
This is from the movie Mannequin. It was nominated for an Oscar.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. I loved that movie. I don't think I would like it now.
So what we are going to attempt to do is the three of us are going to sing an a cappella version of "Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now."
Is it going to stop us now?
No, it's gonna. G-O-N-N-A.
Let's just be correct about it.
Nothing's going to stop us now. No. We'll kind of all sing, or you can cut in and out. I'll try doing
You should know
bass.
If you're listening to this that if you could see it, my facial expressions are totally selling the emotions of the song in a way that works a lot better live. Just know that.
So if you want us to come and perform this song in your town, please call your local alderman and get that together.
And contact Tomfoolery's management.
Yes.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you. This love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
Let them say we're crazy. But do they not? Put your hand in my heart, baby, don't ever look back. Did you heart?
And we build this dream together. That is our forever. Let's go. I don't know the song.
Take it, Cody. Take it away.
And if this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. Nothing's gonna stop us Nothing's gonna stop us now. Whoa.
Whoa, whoa.
Whoa.
And I'm so
glad I found
you.
I'm not gonna lose you. Whatever it takes,
I will stay here with you.
Take it to the bad times.
Take it to the bad times.
Whatever it takes is what I'm gonna do.
Ray Slick.
Let's say you were crazy. What do they know? Put your arms around me, baby. Don't ever let go.
Let the world around us just fall apart.
Maybe we can make it if we're hot to heart.
Ooh, all that I need is you.
All I need.
All I ever need.
And all that I want to do is hold you forever. Ever and ever.
And we can build this dream together, standing strong forever. Nothing's gonna stop us now. And if this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. Nothing's gonna stop us. Nothing's gonna stop us. We fade out. Nothing's gonna. Oh, a little harmony there. No.
Stop us now.
We'll still have each other. Nothing's gonna stop us. Nothing's gonna stop us now.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't hit me, stepdad.
I liked that you still went with nothing's going to stop us at some point during the song. always the correct one.
Oh.
Well, that happened.
I feel like let's call Quincy Jones right now.
This one was my fault, as are most of the books that we read that are terrible.
Sure.
This was your fault.
It was my fault. I forced it on you.
Forced. There it is.
And I'm sorry. Yes, that was the word. Forced it on you, and I'm sorry.
Now, why? That's the question. Why?
Why?
Yeah. Why did you choose
this
book?
How did you even come across this book?
It was given to me by a friend. So blame that friend.
A friend in quotation marks.
Yeah. My dungeon master.
Meaning the local bookstore.
Oh, your dungeon master.
My apparently, I've been told I need to clarify this. My Dungeons & Dragons dungeon master. People have told me in the past that I need to clarify
it. Yeah, it sounds like you just go down and get your ass spanked.
Right. Apparently, people think S&M before they think Dungeons & Dragons, and I'm the weird one. But anyway, his name's Joe. He gave the book to me a while ago, and I just was like, we were looking for books, and I was just like, it was on my shelf, and I was like, oh, the, you know, Harlequin romance novel, that might be fun with Jamie.
It
wasn't.
this leads to the question, why did he have this book?
I don't know.
I mean, he is a dungeon master.
I did particularly like the language in the sex scenes.
Yeah.
The metaphors and things.
Yeah.
Were really fun.
Well, I guess if you're going to be good at something as a Harlequin romance novelist,
like
instead of
he went down and chowed down on her genitals,
oh,
it was,
God, why
it was,
you?
I don't know, you know, I'm trying to use the no. language she would never have used.
I know.
It was, he brought his tongue to her femininity.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God.
Hey, speaking of that, are you guys ready for a little contest?
Ooh. I'm always ready for a contest, Ranjit.
I'm definitely ready.
Is it a sexy voice contest?
No, not quite.
No.
Here's the thing. I've chosen some of the sex scenes from the book, and I would like each of us to read one that I've assigned to you. It's in the notes here. In a voice of your choosing. This could be the voice of a real person that you like do an impersonation of, or a fictional character, someone you kind of do their voice. Okay, like for example, I'm gonna try to do Apu from The Simpsons. I don't have a great Apu, but I can do a serviceable Apu. So here we go. A few assorted sex scenes from the book Baby Fever by Susan Crosby. Now that his mind and other parts of his body were totally focused on how sexy she looked. I told you, it's not a great Apu, okay? It's not a great Apu. Now that his mind and other parts of his body were totally focused on how sexy she looked, he couldn't shake the image. Her skin would seem doubly soft after the stretched finish of fabric. The thought of okay. There I go. The thought of peeling off the uniform and finding her wearing something lacy made his head spin. The thought of removing those garments one by one made his loins pound. Sweat beaded on his forehead. He leaned across the clunky silver-painted cash register, dipped up her chin with his thumb and forefinger, and said, watching her the whole time, kissed her in front of everyone, staking his claim. We already read this, didn't we? But that's okay. A brief kiss, nothing intended to arouse, but still a mark of ownership. Hoots and hollers echoed in the building. Round 6, Patrick. Jazzy's got a boyfriend. Jazzy's got a boyfriend. The chant picked up volume and enthusiasm as Patrick and Jasmine stared at each other. That was a terrible Apu, actually.
It was a bad Apu, but it was a great Nikola Tesla.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I have an impression of Nikola Tesla,
you
apparently.
Do.
I'm going to start using in my set on inventors.
Okay, so for mine, I want you all to pick, because I've got a handful, but I don't have a favor.
Okay.
So for this one, I can do Clinton, Obama, Mickey Mouse, or Boo Boo Bear. Mickey Mouse will be hard because I haven't done I've never really done long sentences as Mickey Mouse.
Okay. Jamie, do you have one in particular in mind out of those?
Oh, man. I like Clinton and Obama a lot.
How about, could you do one in Clinton and one in Obama? Because you have, I think, a couple of sections there.
Sure. I mean, yeah, if you want me to do the two bullet points.
Yeah. How about Obama first and then Clinton?
Okay.
How about that? Okay, here we go.
Pink, lacy, skimpy, powerful. Patrick sucked a little harder, enjoying her squirming reaction, enjoying his own body's response as he grew heavy with need, enjoying feeling like a whole man again, and... what was underneath those tiny bits of lace was an aphrodisiac. He moved down her body deliberately, tongue, her navel, then her abdomen, and beyond. He pressed his lips to her femininity, then moved up to kiss her. She arched as he sent his fingers on an intimate foray. Hey, that was Obama.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Radio is the only way I can get away with doing Obama.
Yeah, it's the only way to pull it off.
Okay, so how about a little Clintonian sexy?
All right, here. I'll give it a shot. He kissed her with a passion elementally close to violence. A passion she returned wholeheartedly. She climbed off his lap and knelt in front of him, looking into his eyes. Eyes that glittered. She leaned forward and took him into her mouth, feeling his hands clamp her head, hearing the sharp breath he drew. After a while, he stopped her and pulling her up again. A heartbeat later, he was inside her, bringing her to fulfillment, delaying his own, holding her beneath her rear as she tightened her grip on his. That's it.
See, that felt strangely like not incongruent.
No, yeah. The problem started happening with Clinton. I started doing Clinton doing an Obama impression partway through. I mean, they're both black presidents. It's hard to keep them straight sometimes.
It is.
Yeah.
My other favorite thing was you were doing the Bill Clinton hand thing,
yes.
Which listeners can't see, but it added to it, I think.
Yes.
You have to do
the little thumb or else you don't know.
Mr. Jamie Campbell, who is your selected?
I'm going to do Mayor Richard M. Daley, the former mayor of the city of Chicago.
And the newest Daley.
Yeah, Yeah, the most recent Daily.
Most recent Daily.
Yeah,
because I needed clarification.
There's a boatload of Dailies who've been mayor of Chicago. So
yep, and this one, get ready here. to do daily properly, you got to start talking out the side of your mouth. And you kind of want to lean forward at the waist, but not making too many left to right motions, gesturing kind of like this, just hands, elbows, you don't bend the wrist. And I have a phrase that helps me get into Richard Daly, which is Chicago O'Hare International Airport. All right. Here we go. They worked at buttons and zippers and elastic and hooks till they were free of clothing and fell across the bed. Their mouths attacked and savored. Their tongues invited and sought. He dragged his lips down to her one thrusting breast and pebbled crest, then to the other, tasting, measuring, arousing, luxuriating. She tasted like heaven itself. Without her, life would be pure hell. He glided a hand down her body into the soft curls, now damp and heated. She responded to his inquisitive touch as his fingers stroked and separated and pressed, sending her hips off the bed and drawing a gasp of pleasure. She wrapped a hand around his masculine heat, driving him wild. Flattening her against the bed, she moved above her, or he moved above her. Oh, let's not confuse that. Kissing her as he went, she released a long, slow moan as he sheathed himself in her inviting warmth. Sounds like a good time. The rhythm started powerfully and stayed there without apology. Why would you say sorry? A driving, pounding cadence that asked and answered, you know, as a conversation with bodies instead of words, I guess. Teased and satisfied, claimed and yielded. She dug her fingers into his back as she lifted her hips higher against him. The friction was driving him wild. She smiled and his world was complete. Marry me, night flower. I know I'm not much of a bargain. I don't come with any guarantees except one, that I'll spend the rest of my life loving you. And that's
wow.
That.
And scene.
Mayor Daly sounds a lot like a detective being asked to recount the events of an evening in a courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I kept imagining asking questions of you.
Yeah.
To which, like, you were responding.
She was over there. You did this thing.
Oh, well, you know, we were hanging out and things got heated. We were playing some Sade in the background. You know, she's a real mood setter.
Sade.
And she invited me to tongue her femininity.
Oh, God.
To sheath or something.
Hey, did somebody say tongue or femininity?
In her warmth.
I like that we just had like a democratic roundtable of sexual right. organs.
My favorite thing about the passage that Mayor Daly read is he says, the guy's like, marry me. I'm not much of a bargain. This guy is like a self-made multimillionaire,
yep.
Awesome body, totally handsome, like, and he's
Runchett's
all like,
got a boyfriend.
He's
Runchett's
all like,
got a boyfriend.
I'm not much, but would you consider marrying me?
Oh, and also, I recently had a heart attack, so there's a decent chance I'll be dying soon and giving it to you, all yeah. my millions.
But could you see it in your heart to marry me in spite of all these terrible things about
Look,
me?
I know I'm not much, and you are a waitress at two different restaurants. So you got a lot of options.
One of my favorite things about this book was the epilogue.
Oh, God.
The epilogue.
Oh, yeah, where her kids come back.
Yeah.
Are you using the term favorite sarcastically?
Well,
there?
Yes.
It's like a Deus Ex Machina, but as an epilogue. And it's like she just was like, oh, well, I've reached 180-page minimum. Submitting this book, getting it published, getting my check. Oh, all the damn story that I said about her kids being gone. Not going to bother with finishing that
up. Why would you? Who would have thought? Who would have thought that this was going to be harder than everything else we have read before this? Like, seriously.
Yeah, it's...
We managed to talk about Pink Swastika.
Yeah.
And we managed to talk about Edgar Allan Poe's book. We managed to talk about Doc Savage. Like, Doc Savage.
I think I know what the problem is. It's because this book, other than just going, it's a real shitty book, it doesn't evoke anything emotional.
Right.
So it's not so good that you're like, I love this. I'm excited about this. This made me feel this thing. We all, at the same time, it was just bland bad. It wasn't bad that we're like, I'm so pissed off at the things they said. I have an opinion about this.
I think you're right. Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's there's no depth.
Yeah.
There's no, even if it's terrible, the pink swastika at least had arguments that it made.
Right.
Yeah. And this literally is just, other than just being angry about
it. Like maybe if she'd gotten pregnant by him and then tried to have the baby, like then we would have more to say. But like he can't get an erection the first time because he remembers his dead wife, who's been dead 25 years. Get a hard on, buddy. I don't think it's the dead wife at this point.
She's been dead longer than I've been alive.
Right. Well, and he's scared, I guess, of dying because of the recent heart attack.
Right. I mean, that makes sense, although...
And then he goes down and tongues her femininity because...
Okay, let's talk boners. Let's talk boners. If you have a heart attack, okay... Aren't you going to want to, like, get it on more? Because it's like, you know, tempest fugit, right? Like, you gotta get on it.
You mean you gotta have sex a lot because who knows when you're going to die?
Right.
Sure, but what if sex is the cause of the death? Like, you're like, I'm getting excited. Oh, shit. Oh, no. Oh, no.
But isn't that a way to go?
I guess, but only if you finish.
True.
Because that's going to suck just leading up to it and die.
And also only if you actually want to die.
You know, true,
he had a great life. He didn't want to die, you know?
That's true.
So right.
Even dying while doing it.
But okay, but here's my point. If you're that trigger happy with your heart where you could just go having sex, then you're going to die soon anyway because it's not like it's that hard on your heart. It's hard on your heart, but I mean, so are a lot of other things like owning a docking business.
That's why I don't have one.
Me too.
Owning a stevedore.
I used to own a shipping company, but then my doctor prescribed that I sell it, and I sold it to the Vanderbilts.
Ask your doctor whether selling your shipping company to the Vanderbilts
is right for you.
Is right for you.
Yes, ask Dr. Vanderbilt.
Side effects include Rockefeller syndrome.
Yeah, so one of my favorite things in the book... It's just that the wrapping all that stuff up at the end. Like, magically, her ex-husband changed his mind about everything. I was like, here's the kids. I'm a terrible person, and I don't ever need to see them again unless they want to. That actually made me a little angry at the writer.
What about the weird revelation when she goes to the house and Patrick's there, and she's like, why are you here, Patrick? Yeah. Oh, Rye is your son-in-law.
And then he's like, wait a minute, you know Rye? But then he never asks anything about it.
Yeah, they never sit down and talk about it.
They have he this just totally weird shit happen.
Finds a file in his private investigator home office with all the information about her missing children. And then he, the guy who's scared to have sex because of his heart attack, goes, fuck it, I'm going to hunt down this guy and go overseas.
To London to track down this person.
Right.
This kidnapper.
Oh, yeah, well, no, and I love that, in the beginning, I love that, like, he shows up, and they're leaving, and then they don't really explain why they're leaving. Like, they say they're going, I think they give a vague idea that they're, like, tracking somebody or something, or that they're some sort of investigators of some kind, but, like, they don't explain why they're leaving. And then not only that, but, like, your father showed up randomly, and you're just like, oh, hey, we're running to the airport. You feel free to stay at our place or whatever. And then you just split? Like, you can't get a later flight? Your father's a millionaire.
Yeah, you postpone that by a couple hours.
Right. I'm sure he could rent a plane for you.
Yeah.
He's a millionaire. He could buy a plane that night for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck was that? And also, you don't question that? You're just like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course. That's the thing my father always does, is randomly take a trip to San Francisco without telling me about it.
And that's also odd that he's, oh, you don't want to stay at our house. We're going to get you a membership at a country club that you can live at for a few weeks.
Yeah. And not only that, but yeah. I've never taken a vacation for as long as you've probably known me, daughter, but I'm taking a several-week-long one now, And not only that, but I'm going to do it suddenly without warning.
And since you're not here, I'll be doing it all by myself, not going home or somewhere else that might interest me. I'm just going to stay in the town that you live in while you're not there.
And just wait for you.
Yeah.
There's nothing weird about this. Nothing suspicious. Don't ask more questions. It's not like you're a private investigator or something.
Oh, my God. Then when he does go overseas, he confronts the guy that has kidnapped Jasmine's children for 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Has had them. And he just gives up right away. It's like, I flew all the way to London, tracked you down. The woman I love, you've stolen her kids. And the guy goes, yeah, I'm not going to tell you. And he's like, oh, man, I really thought this was going to work.
Fair enough, sir. I'll see you later.
Good day. Have you been to Francisco of the San? Come wait, check it out.
Didn't he also say to the guy, well, eventually they'll become adults and she'll find out. Good day, sir. You can't hide them forever.
She'll find out that they're adults.
They're going to get on Facebook.
And then that day, sir. Ooh, that day. Do you have a 5 for the cab? No? Well, goodbye.
Jasmine, who has lived in San Francisco for years, has never set foot on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Never at all.
Well, you know, it's such a schlep.
Yeah, he is... Patrick is telling her, he's like, let me show you the San Francisco I've discovered.
That you've lived in for years.
But me for weeks.
And she's like, why no? I've never been on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Don't you understand? I'm not rich. I can't go to the Golden Gate Bridge. We're from two different worlds.
That's for the aristocracy. The Golden Gate Bridge.
I live in the Oakland of San Francisco, and you don't live in San Francisco at all. It'll never work. We're two different people. And by that, I mean that you obviously have read a guidebook, and I've apparently never done anything but close my eyes when I walk to work.
Oh, there was a part at the end of the book that I want Cody to read.
Patrick watched his wife move gracefully across the room. The one box she wasn't trusting to the movers held securely in her arms. She set it by the front door, next to her purse. Any minute now, they would be invaded by a small army of oversized men who would pack everything else into the boxes and carry them off to their new home 2 miles away. He was going to miss this cozy little place where their marriage had taken root. In the 2 months since their wedding, they'd honeymooned at a friend's cabin in the Rockies, then had alternated time between Boston and here. He preferred here. Just that?
That's it. So I decided that whole section could have been replaced with 3 words. Any ideas? No, that's true. That those 3 words could have replaced it. But I felt like the author was making a specific point there that can be summed up in 3 words.
Bitches be cray?
No, it is about, it's about her.
Okay. Is it, now she's rich?
Yes.
Right?
That was the whole point of that. Because the whole story is like, she's so poor, she has to work 2 jobs.
Right.
Which, you know.
I feel like she still buried the lead, though. Because it's like she, well, first of all, 2 months? 2 months? They went to the Rockies and back and forth between Boston and there, and they're also moving 2 blocks? 2 miles? Was it 2 miles or 2 blocks? 2 miles?
2 miles.
I don't think this lady really sat down with a calendar and call me crazy based on the rest of this book.
Hey, Susan Crosby. It's not this lady. Call her Susan.
I do apologize.
You didn't even remember her name.
That was you calling her this lady, I think, was a political hot potato.
Oh, no. I think I just heard a political hot potato get dropped.
Can we just, I kind of want to just go ahead and read, I want to read the whole epilogue. Can we do that?
Yeah.
All right, so he preferred here, right? He watched her stretch the kinks out of her back, his gaze tracing the curves of her body.
Mm.
A body he knew better than his own.
That's weird.
That is weird. That is very weird. Like, he knows, like, all of, like, her her abscesses and, like, the, like, how
it gets... filled everyone.
It gets inflamed when she eats taquitos. Like,
he has sheathed himself.
She wasn't far enough along in her pregnancy to show yet, except in her breasts.
Them titties was big.
Tiggle bitties.
They was banging.
He wasn't complaining. He was not complaining, even though she probably thought she needed to lose 10 to 15 pounds in her breasts.
Voluptuous, never mind.
He's a millionaire with a totally hot wife. He's not complaining.
He only had to look at her or think about her or smell her shampoo. I love that that is in dashes. Like, it's a list, and then dash, or smell her shampoo, dash, to feel desire.
One of these things is not like the other.
Her hair swung against her cheeks.
Yeah, butt cheeks.
As she turned and caught him staring at her, wanting her, needing her. He didn't hide anything from her anymore.
Not even his penis.
The movers will be here any second, she said with a wicked grin, teasing him with the knowledge he'd have to wait. He took the few steps necessary to reach her side. Where's your spirit of adventure? In my new home, but she gave him a promise and a kiss that lit his fire spontaneously. A knock sounded. He groaned and backed away. I'd better go into the bedroom for a second, he said, and make myself presentable.
Beat off.
She chuckled as she headed to the door and opened it. Oh my God! Her voice held the highest pitch he'd ever heard. Sorry. Oh my God! That was better? Okay. The most tension. The most shock. He turned and saw Deacon and her children standing in the doorway. He reached her side as she wavered. Held her until she could throw her arms around her children, sobbing. Trying to talk at the same time, telling them how beautiful they were. Matthew was taller than Jasmine by several inches. Rain, as tall as her mother. All three had the same white blonde hair, like a Malfoy.
All three were hot.
Although Rain's curled beguilingly down her back.
Beguilingly?
Patrick looked at Deacon. I'm prepared for whatever consequences you settle on, legal or personal, he said, obviously shaken. I can't live with the lies any longer. I waited. Oh, wait. This is Deacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They fucking gotta say who's talking. Because Patrick looked at Deacon. Does not make it clear who is then speaking. So that was Patrick's voice. So.
Because Patrick was the active person there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Patrick looked at Deacon. I assumed it was Patrick talking.
Yes.
I'm prepared for whatever consequences you settle on, legal or personal, he said, obviously shaken. I can't live with the lies any longer. I waited until their school year was over. Then I told them everything. Right now, they hate me a lot. Maybe they won't ever forgive me.
Now that your kids are done with finals, your mom's not dead. Totally kidnapped you.
And I'm going to travel with you
to
see her, because you're not going to totally just fucking split for no reason.
And not just see her. I'm going to drop you off there and never see you again.
And come with you.
Hey. I do kind of want to see her. I don't know if you know this. I used to do it with your mom. I just kind of want to see what she looks like now.
But the things you said and the things that Jasmine said finally convinced me I couldn't continue this charade. He looked at Jasmine and their children as they huddled together. I'll leave them with you.
They huddle together.
Yes, they're huddling. They're
like 34, X9, 3.
They're working on a play.
We're going to T-streaks.
Get in here. What's been going on?
What is happening? Who are you?
Come on, guys. Take a knee.
Who's this older,
get in
really
here,
athletic man who seems to be well off?
Well, we're sheathing. And
I'll leave them with you. If and when they want to see me, I'll hope you let me know. He turned away. Deacon, Jasmine said, clutching her children to her side. He faced her and straightened his shoulders. Thank you. He nodded, then left, shutting the door behind him. We never forgot you, Mom, Matthew said, his voice cracking. Oh, sorry. We never forgot you, Mom, Matthew said, his voice cracking. Rainy and I reminded each other all the time about you. I remembered the cookies, Rain said, and the bedtime stories. Matthew remembered the trips to the park and being pushed on the swing. Dad did a horrible thing. He's a horrible, horrible man. He did do a horrible thing, Jasmine said. But he's trying to make up for it. We'll just take some time together and see what happens, okay? With her arms around them, she smiled through her tears at Patrick. As she introduced them, and he saw a flicker of jealousy cross their faces. They'd probably expected to be alone with her. Well, he'd expected that for himself, too. Oh,
shit. Okay, hold on. How do you think he's going to respond to this? Like, he just married this woman, right?
Well, no, I mean, and he did at the same time go to London to get the kids back.
Right. But who doesn't do that?
People without passports.
She probably thought that she needed to lose like 10 to 15 pounds sterling, but he didn't think so.
He thought she needed to lose a couple of hundred pounds sterling. Of kids.
How big are those children?
They weigh 100 pounds each.
Yeah.
That's probably what they do weigh, actually.
That makes sense, I guess. I don't know how much children weigh. It's been a while since I've picked one up. Let it sit there. But he was more than willing to adapt. It would just be another adventure during the second half of his life. Nothing of consequence ever came easy. Emphasis mine. A moment of pure selfishness drifted through him. It drifted.
I'm pretty sure they're describing a fart right there.
Gratitude that she was already pregnant. Because if her children had come home to her before the pregnancy, it might never have happened. There would be adjustments for all of them, but they would work together as a family. A family for always. Now that you've experienced baby fever, be sure to catch wedding fever, as Magnolia finally gets a chance at marriage. But who will be her groom? Find out soon in Silhouette Desire.
I liked the ad for the next book. Right there in the epilogue, not a separate page.
It's literally
part of the story.
There is literally 5 asterisks, and then a double space, and then ad.
And I like that the ad for the next book is in the 1930s dialect.
Oh yeah,
as delivered by Cody Melcher.
It was
war bonds. Get wedding fever.
Now hey. Listen here, you see?
Hey,
get this book, wedding.
Now that you got wedding fever, I've got some hair tonics for you that you can take. I got some snake oil here. I got some things over here. We got a little bottle of laudanum. Yeah, it's good things going.
Ryan, I'm just so glad those kids never had to experience not being rich.
That is a good point.
That's
a really good point.
Yeah, the dad did some terrible things. This guy's rich, right? No, he's not. They weren't that terrible. I'm going to go now.
He can be. You made a good point about forgiving him. I think maybe if I run quickly enough, I can catch a cab. Did they have British accents?
No, because you read them and they didn't.
Maybe posthumously. And by posthumously, I don't mean after they've died.
Although I don't feel like they spent all their time in England. I feel like they go all over the place hiding from mom.
Yeah, that's true. They're globetrotting wealthy kids.
You know, like you do.
Yeah.
Well, if you're in Europe, it's all pretty close to each other. It's not that hard to globetrot when you're on that part of the globe.
They have some good timing, these kids. You're right, Jamie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're lucky
like,
kids.
She was poor forever, and then like a week after she got rich, that's right. When they showed up.
2 months in. And not only that, but they didn't accidentally show up while they were on their honeymoon or going back and forth between Boston and San Francisco. They showed up at a pretty opportune moment.
Just in time to claim a room in the new house.
Right. Well, and not only that, but they also showed up to the old house the day they were moving out. If they'd shown up a day later, they would have no idea where she lived.
Oh, no. Someone's kidnapped mom this time.
Oh.
Get our next book, reader.
Mommy Fever. They searched the country for her, but she's only moved a mile down the road.
But they're really rich, so they searched the whole country.
Except for this town in San Francisco.
San Francisco is full of little towns.
There's a lot of little towns in San Francisco.
Which town are you from, San Franciscan?
I'm from Portland. Portland, the San Francisco. Of Portland,
San Francisco.
I'm from Washington, D.C., San Francisco.
See, that's a large city. There are also many large cities in San Francisco.
See, the trick, the trick about Mommy Fever is that she wasn't lost. She was just on the Golden Gate Bridge the whole time, but nobody had ever been there.
Nobody, because
the gate was locked.
They didn't know the code.
They had to keep out the Raiders somehow. The Oakland Raiders. Guys, let's go around and let's do like a short like paragraph of what we're going to take away from Baby Fever, whether it be the book itself or the experience of having to read the book. Ranjit, do you want to start?
The main thing I experienced is I read a type of book that I've never read before and that I know I will never read again. But at least now I've read one. I have read a romance novel.
There you go.
I know what they are.
Yes.
And my opinion of them is the same or worse as before I read it.
Huh.
What about you,
Words
Cody?
To live by. Words to live by, Ranjit.
Yeah, what about you?
I learned that you can know fuck all about plot, character development, story arcs, grammar, and punctuation, and yet still write a book that gets a sequel. And both of them are published.
Yes.
So take that, anyone who's ever tried to be an author and didn't make it. You are two down from Susan fucking Crosby. Good luck on your fantasy fiction novel. Jamie, what about you?
Well, I learned never to give up. You know,
Jamie was inspired by this book.
If you want to have a...
He unleashed the giant within.
If you want to have a baby, you know, or... If you're waitressing two jobs and you're down, you know, or some dude kidnaps your kids for 7 years, you don't give up. Don't give up, because one day you're going to meet an old man with a great body who recently had a heart attack, who's a millionaire. If you just gave up, you'd have never got him to tongue your femininity, to sheathe you. To go to England and try to get your kids back.
Well, half-assed.
And not succeed.
And then okay by having a friendly conversation
with
the kidnapper.
Don't give up, you guys.
Don't give up, guys.
And if you didn't like Baby Fever, don't give up. Wedding Fever is available.
And you're going to love Wedding Fever.
keep trying with this particular series
of
books.
Did you find Jasmine unsufferable? Insufferable?
I wanted to vomit every time I heard Nightflower.
Then you're going to you're going to love her sister Magnolia, who was already started off at the beginning of the book as insufferable. Like she was presented to you as insufferable. You're going to love her as the protagonist of her own book.
One thing's for sure, a flower's going to open up.
But is it a Venus flytrap? That is the question.
Oh, that is the question.
Mm. So, ladies.
Lady.
For those of you out there that are worried that you'll never find love, or you're worried that you're never going to make anything of your life, don't worry, because eventually a man will come along and save you.
God, I can't wait.
Jamie can't wait, and neither can
Jamie,
I.
Jamie, that was, we were talking to the ladies there.
Hey.
Maybe a man. Maybe
let
a
the
hot,
sister, let the sister talk.
Maybe a hot millionaire will come and save Jamie. We don't know.
Yeah. She can be an old lady with a great body,
like Joan Rivers.
Oh God, why not?
I mean, you've already read this book. I think you can't go much lower.
No, I've sunk.
Yep. I feel like this is a podcast that we need to start doing. Like with free booze for our guest, Because as this show goes on, it just gets more and more like, it turns into more and more like a late night bar room, just glassy eyed staring of just like, oh God, what have I done with my life? Where I've ended up in Cody Melcher's apartment talking into a microphone about the worst thing I've ever read in my entire life. What turns did I make and how can I avoid them in the future? So, Jamie.
Hey.
You got any shows coming up or anything?
Oh, I've got a lot of shows coming up. I do a ton of shows. I'm around Chicago. If you'd like to see me, I usually post a pretty current show calendar on jamiecampbellcomedy.com. But I've got two great ongoing shows every week at the Comedy Sports Theater every Monday at 8 o'clock, 100 Proof Comedy. Mm-hmm. It's a stand-up show. And then Fridays at midnight, I host a late-night talk show called Talk Hard. And then also Fridays at 10, I'm at the Annoyance Theater performing with their house ensemble, Fire and Beer.
So you're in a show Fridays at 10 and Fridays at midnight.
Hey, I don't fuck around.
That is true, except for when you read romance novels.
And then all I do is fuck around.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Tome Foolery. We read Baby Fever, and we will never talk about it ever again. Don't even ask us if you know us in person.
We won't remember the name Susan Crosby or mention it.
It's my nom, guys. This book is my nom, and I don't know if I'll make it through. If you need some sort of reparative therapy, feel free to email us at tomefoolery@gmail.com. Give us some feedback. Post it on the Facebooks or the Twitters or any other social media of any kind.
Or on an iTunes review.
Yeah, iTunes review about how sad your life has become now that you've been listening to this podcast. And then maybe you can all find each other and create a support group.
Hey, never give up.
Never surrender. our next, the book we're reading in January is a collection of short stories by a Polish man.
Stefan Grabinski.
Stefan Grabinski. He was considered the Polish Poe. We'll find out if that was accurate in January. So keep an eye out for that in the preface episode coming out before it. I hope you enjoy our new logo by Olin Kidd. And I hope you enjoy our new theme song and ending song. I like to call them the bookend songs. By Mr. Rob Scallon. You can find him on YouTube. YouTube.com/Rob Scallon. Guys, let's go around. Let's do a one word response to the book. And then we're going to slough off this mortal coil. Because that's what I'm going to do. I'm drinking till I drop tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, so going around, Runge.
No.
Cody? Stevedore.
And Jamie?
Femininity.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. All right. This has been Tome Foolery. Thank you very much. Runjit, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
And remember, pros before hoes, especially if they have baby fever.